at your own risk. Because it leads to the future. Not a future that will be, but one that might be. This is not a new world. It is simply an extension of what began in the old one. It has refinements, technological advances.
Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is the Insurgent Radio Network with your host, Tom Metzger.
And this is Terrible Tommy in the bunker right here in north central Indiana on a pretty cool day. It's, about 10 degrees out there, I think. Maybe go up to 20 today. But that's what we're used to now. That's right. It is February the 4th, 2014, all day long. And you got a whole month now to get it done, so don't dilly-dally. And we're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. And that's where you send your donations for the radio show and any other donations for other projects that we have going. And we're developing a few more here, so we appreciate those that are donating a little extra. And J&R out there, they do a damn good job, I'm telling you. And then we got our guy from L.A. That just sent me a bunch of T-shirts. He contributed a lot of money to the inmates, too, and I'm getting some more of that out next day or so. So anyhow, we got big things are happening here in the bunker. Got me a super deluxe telephone outfit in here. I needed a two-line phone device, and I got one. And it's an AT&T office type. And you're not going to believe this. This is why I say hunter-gatherers make out. I got it on eBay for $1 plus $7 shipping. So this beautiful, light new, looks like it just came out of the box phone that does everything I want to, was $8 or so. And I went up to Amazon and I saw the same thing. They wanted about $100. How about that, boys and girls? It pays to be a hunter-gatherer. I think that may have something to do with a particular seller having an over amount of stuff that he wants to get rid of stuff, or somehow he wants to keep his level of selling up on commercially on the internet or something. Because, I mean, who's going to sell a brand new phone for $1 plus shipping? Unless there's something that something I don't know about, but I imagine it has something to do with being overstocked, or something to do with eBay. He's got to sell so much a month to get a discount or something like that. But I'm sure I'll hear the reason someday. But I don't care about the reason. I got the phone. Yeah, I got that 14.5 T-shirts, and if I go around town or traveling a little bit, I'm going to wear those 14.5 T-shirts. They're nice. They're nice. Well, I see that NSA is busy. Several of the nation's leading technology companies released new data on Monday detailing the extent of NSA surveillance of their users. Numbers released by Yahoo, Google, and Microsoft, LinkedIn, and Facebook showed that the first 6 months of 2013, the NSA submitted requests for private information from at least 59,000 user accounts. Of the five companies, Yahoo appears to have been the favorite of NSA analysts. The Sunnyvale company received national security requests for content from at least 30,000 users, and Microsoft fielded requests affecting at least 15,000 accounts, while Google requests affect 9,000 user accounts. Facebook said that its requests affect at least 5,000 users, and LinkedIn said it received fewer than 250 national security requests. The companies may also have received requests for non-content information, such as data about times, senders, and recipients of email messages. Yahoo, Google, Facebook, and Microsoft all said they received fewer than 1,000 of these in the first half of 2013. Well, just like I've told you for a long time, there is no defense. I know that some people tried to tell me all you have to do is encrypt this and encrypt that and encrypt this. Well, I just never wanted to get into it because I don't trust anything. I don't. And I must say that computer man had turned out to be an ATF informant. At least he honestly said, there's no way that you can stop it. Wolf DC seemed to think there was encryption that could stop everything, but it's more trouble than it's worth. The point is, you don't talk on the telephone about anything illegal, and you don't talk about anything illegal on the web. And shouldn't be talking about anything illegal anyhow. You're a lone wolf. You don't have to talk about it. So that's my my thought for the day about that. Oh, we got a sad note today that our friend Fred Jasky from California, the one that a couple of you people had sent money for him, he got his apartment burnt out and he ended up in one of these street people places, and then got him out of there and back into a place to live. And I didn't realize he was that sick. Of course, he had been, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, he had been walking across the street and he got hit by a car, ended up losing his leg. And so there was probably ramifications from those injuries, too, that doesn't do you any good. So I was surprised because I just talked to him on the phone and just a few weeks ago, a couple of weeks ago, and then I sent him a little money too. Poor old Fred Jasky, I've knew for, at least 20 years. He was involved with Butler's organization. He went up there and lived around the Butler compound for a while, and he knew all those people. He was a heavy identity guy, and he used to laugh because he said, "I'm not going to try to change your mind." And I said, "I'm not going to try to change yours either." So poor old Fred, he served the struggle for a long time, and we'll miss him. Now all I got to do is find out where his remains are going to be rested, and we'll put him on our list of places to observe when you're around in a place like that. I mean, we've got a list up there on the website, I believe, and every time we find out where there's someone who's been a loyal contributor to the struggle is buried, we make a note of it so that if you'd like to pay your respects and drop by the graveyard or whatever, you can. There is a program on the internet called Graveland, I believe, .com, to where you can search out where people are buried. And, you know, that's another thing, and I hate to keep beating the same old drum, but the right wing never seemed to care about anybody. I mean, you know, once they're dead, and you're lucky if they care about you when you're alive. But I know I had to raise hell to get some people to go down and clean up Ben Klassen's grave down there in Otto, North Carolina. I had to raise hell to get people to take flowers over to, my short-term memory's got me again here, and I don't have time to go searching it up, but she was our she-wolf from down around Jackson, Mississippi. And that's where her and Tommy Terrence took on the Feds and the Jews. And she was wielding a machine gun, according to my information, when she died. And she was pregnant also and a school teacher. Although, you know, I get fed up with both Northerners and Southerners. But down south, they've got these Klans running around and people who've been in the Klan for years and all that kind of stuff. And all these pro-white people running around the south. And you'd think I could get somebody to put flowers on Kathy Ainsworth on her grave? say once a month. I think there was one fellow did it a couple of times, and that was the end of it. This makes me sick, you know, because we've got heroes and buried all over this country that need some respect and put some flowers on their grave and visit them once in a while. If you're traveling around the country, have a little map of where they're at, you know. Know that they don't know about it or nothing like that. Once you're dead, you're dead. But on the other hand, it's something that we should do. You know, in fact, nowadays, I don't think a lot of people care even where their grandfathers or grandmothers are buried, or even their mothers and fathers, I think, a lot of times. People just don't care about anything. I mean, you know. And that's the problem. I hear all of these young guys with these radio shows on the internet. Rarely ever hear them talking about the people who've gone before them and what they've accomplished, because they say, well, they did it wrong, or he believed this and that and ain't right, but they were racial. It's like these people never lived. Some of our great white racial separatist leaders might as well have never lived, according to this new generation of people. And I'm not saying that just because I'm getting up there myself, because it's been going on for a long time. They'll rah-rah and Sieg Heil and say how much they respect and love these leaders. But within about 5 years, they're all forgotten. I'm going to clue you in. You're never going to win a struggle with that kind of attitude. No. You got to hand it to the blacks. Their leaders go to prison. Don't matter what they did. They have a significant amount of black people who support them. And Jews, they never forget. A percentage of them never forget people like Mark Ahani and people like that. But good white Aryans, boy, I'll tell you, out of sight, out of mind, man. Out of sight, out of mind, and you're not going to go anywhere that way. Well, the Jews don't seem to be too happy with our Secretary of State. The USA's ambassador to Israel, Dan Shapiro, is a nice guy. Here's another Jew. This is from the Jew Press. It may be quite challenging for him to swallow all the lies and hypocrisy of dealing with the Palestinian Authority, but he is loyal to his job. Oh, isn't he a nice Jew boy? Unfortunately for Shapiro, his boss, the U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, is a moron. Well, that's one thing I agree with you Jews on. He is a moron. He's just a rich moron that didn't make his money himself. He got it from his wife. Quote, last year not one Israeli was killed by a Palestinian from the West Bank, unquote, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry told guests at a Munich conference on Saturday, according to the official U.S. State Department transcript. I guess Kerry doesn't follow the news from Israel very closely, since he's too busy drawing up plans for Israel's return to Auschwitz borders. Only days earlier, Shin Bet's report on last year's terror noted that terror in the West Bank had doubled. Everything's terror now. Everything terror. A Jew stubs his toe, it's terror. The curb is terrorizing him. And that not one Israeli was killed by a Palestinian from the West Bank, but actually many Israelis. I wonder if they were Israeli Jews or Israeli Arabs. Killed by the West Bank Arabs, over 44 wounded in the West Bank Arab terror attacks. Well, I got news for you. My opinion is you don't own the land. You have no claim at all. You had the Balfour Declaration and bullshit, and you got that land, and you did steal it from the people who lived there. There were a lot of Jews living around there, just living there, and if they'd have kept it up like that, they'd have lived in peace. But no, the British had a mandate over it, and you had to take it, you know, and use the phony Bible as an excuse. And people who use the Bible for Rand McNally roadmap, are insane. You'll never find your way home. So if the Palestinians want to wipe out Israel, that's fine with me, because it's more theirs than it is the Jews. In fact, of course, from the very beginning, these have been European Jews that have been in control. They're dying off now. And the dark Jews are taking over, which it'll eventually evolve back to those people in the end anyhow. Anyhow, that's a saying that Kerry's a moron. I agree with that, but all this pushing the United States government around and absorbing it and telling it what to do is crap. And if there's any reason to hate these people, that's the reason. My secondary reason, because I make no apologies for hating, because I make no apologies for loving. My reason is they invented Christianity, really. I mean, the Jews came over there, got into Rome, and started working on this long-range plan, created Christianity, because they knew that Judaism wasn't going to fly big time in its purity. And all of us, and then the white crooks took that Christian thing and twisted it all around to use for their own benefit, even using it sometimes to whack the Jews. And so, but we've got this Christ insanity stuff to thank the Jews for. So that's, if I'm going to hate the Jews, that's my big reason for hating them, is they brought Christ insanity into Europe. Yeah. That may make a few people out there offended, but I offend people all the time, and people offend me, and I just go to sleep, get up, and shrug it off. Shake it off, baby. Just don't step on my blue suede shoes. I sent this deal out about Blasio, the new mayor of New York, and he's getting mixed reviews from the Jews, and because he's pretty sympathetic to new politics down in South America. But anyhow, on Wednesday, February the 5th, ads will appear in numerous New York City area Jewish media castigating a list of 58 angry New York Jews. Why? Because those angry Jews publicly admonished newly elected New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio for daring to appear at a pro-Israel event, declaring his support for the sponsoring organization and for Israel. The pushback is coming from a small, quickly mobilized group of business and other professional New York residents who want it known that AIPAC, like the JCRCs and the federations, are the backbone of the American community, and they represent mainstream American Jewry. Mainstream Jewry expects and appreciates support for Israel from its elected officials. So it says. Then it says, so what's going on here? In an unscheduled appearance at the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee event on January 23rd, to which the media were most decidedly not invited, Mayor de Blasio gave a fairly run-of-the-mill pro-Israel speech, you know, like, we swear allegiance forever to Israel. Screw New York City. No biggie pretty much anywhere in North America, and certainly not in New York City, because we all know everybody worships the Jews. As Jeffrey Weisenfeld, one of the New Yorkers who took out the ad, told the Jewish press, the mayor gave a solid pro-Israel speech, but these myopic progressive New York Jews are so foolish, they don't care that AIPAC supported Rabin and Barak when they were each prime minister. Whatever government is democratically elected, that's who AIPAC supports. But no, these people have to put out their own selfish progressive interests ahead of everything. When you start attacking the mainstays of the Jew community, when AIPAC is unacceptable, that reveals a pathological selfishness, Weisenfeld growled. For some reason, a gaggle of tolerant, progressive New York Jewish crowd responded, shall we say intolerantly, to what they saw as a possible betrayal of their progressive values by the most progressive and of Oh, most progressive of white politicians to make it to the top rung of city politics. I can't believe it. They said white. The public dressing down of de Blasio came in the form of a letter which was sent out on a cheap electronically and then became viral and ended up for free on the pages of the progressive darling Israel newspaper, Haaretz. Well, anyhow, I'm not going to waste the whole show talking about this, but you got to know the Jews fight among themselves like, shall I say, women? No, like cats and dogs, they fight among themselves. What I've said, wherever there's a high concentration of Jews and they're being persecuted, please put a wall around them. Don't persecute them. Just leave them in peace, and within 10 years, they'll all be dead. They'll kill each other. ATT, your statements on yesterday's show about the education system was one of the best moments ever. It much sums up everything that's wrong with the education system. But of course, you will never hear that from the powers that be. There are just way too many worthless colleges unless you intend to become a doctor, lawyer, an engineer, and you have the intelligence, then maybe college is worth it. Other than that, college is a complete waste of time. You should either go to work or go to a trade school, which is what we should really start emphasizing, like you said yesterday. Of course, another way, I think the best way, is separation so that way the education system is not dumbed down the way it has been since segregation. True. Thank you for that input. That's right. Talking to a mother yesterday, and she was talking about how her kid, he's got a lot of testosterone and he jumps around, but he's a smart kid, and she had him in a school here locally, close in, and they were pumping him full of drugs. And I said, are they still doing that around here in northern Indiana? Yeah, she said, they're still pumping him into drugs if they show, some excitement and they don't sit there like a zombie. They want to give him drugs. And she took him out of that school, put him in another school, and his grades went through the roof. He did much better. You see, that's all about this Jew equality thing. Of course, the Jews don't believe it for themselves, but they want everybody else to think about equality, everything equal, boys and girls and everything. Sit in that classroom and just be equal. Because they're not educating. Edu means from within. It doesn't mean from without. And so they just want them to sit there and keep their mouth shut and make good citizens out of them, good taxpayers that are going to be weighted down with trillions of dollars in debt before they're even 21. And all the college debt and everything else, they have no future. And economically, they have no future. And so that's what they're producing in the schools. And people sit around saying, I can't understand it. Can't understand it. We've got all these social programs and so forth, and we're teaching them all those good things. But are you teaching them hard science? I'd like to see a radio station, a public radio station in the community here to where they strict science and arts and so forth. Because all you get on the radio around here is preachers, rock and roll, rap, and football and basketball. Don't forget football and basketball. My God. The way you hear these guys, announcers, talk about football and basketball and players, it's like they're in there masturbating to these guys, you know. Oh, my God, what a wonderful guy. Oh, the most wonderful guy that ever lived. He was able to run a football from one end of this field to the other. Oh, what a guy. I called him and said, hey, I got a good-looking blonde daughter. Come on over here, Mr. Black Man, you football player. You're a great hero. I would be honored for you to come into our home and take out our blonde daughter. Yeah. And you know I'm not bullshitting you either. That's why I didn't give a damn when O.J. Simpson cut the head off of his girlfriend. And I didn't give a damn about the father crying hot crocodile tears. Because he obviously wanted to hobnob with O.J. Simpson, the football player. So he let his daughter, his beautiful daughter, be his concubine, and she got her head chopped off. That's the way that goes, and I have no sympathy whatsoever. In fact, in some ways, O.J. may have done our race a favor, because she was no good to us anymore. Probably aware of this Pat Robinson gang of con men. This is out of Herzliya, Israel. As they say in the preaching business, Pat Robertson had them in the palm of his hand. No matter that his audience wasn't predominantly Christian, let alone American, they drank up every word. And when the founder of the Christian Bullshit Network culminated his Give No Ground speech to the elite Israel's political and military establishment with a ringing declaration, quote, be strong, unquote. Many of his listeners jumped to their feet to give him a boisterous round of applause. What I can't understand, I'm not a Christian, but I read what allegedly Jesus was supposed to have said, even though I don't believe in his existence, but what he said is a total opposite of what this clown preaches. And he's encouraging the Israelis to be more militant and more killing. The rapturous response to Robertson here last week is just one example of how a large and growing group of conservative American Christians who really support the Republican Party, remember that, has entered Israel's political scene with startling vigor, even as the Holy Land's indigenous Christian communities wither due to war and a dying economy. Calling themselves Christian Zionists, they're increasingly viewed as a political lifeline by influential Israelis who are eager for allies to fight what they see as a rising global tide of criticism aimed at Jews and Israel, and to blunt suggestions that Israel is the main culprit in the Israeli-Palestinian morass. Well, you stole their land, stupid bastard. You stole the country that was, whether it was Palestinian or not, it wasn't European Jews through the Balfour Declaration. You stole it, you goddamn thieves. The strategic alliance with groups that are friends and special allies, including 70 million U.S. evangelicals and 600 worldwide, according to estimates by the movement's leaders, could not deepen soon enough, according to Rabbi Yechiel Eckstein, founder of the International Fellowship of Christian and Jews. This is a war, quote, a war of images that reverberates throughout the world, unquote, Eckstein said last week in his seaside town, in his villa overlooking the blue Mediterranean, sipping mint juleps, and his nigger servants all around him. quote, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict is at the cusp of becoming, God forbid, a worldwide conflict between Jews and Muslims, unquote. Well, I guess you're right. I guess you're right. They're never going to forgive you. Those Palestinians and most of those Islamic people are not going to forgive you bastards. But the trouble is they're not going to forgive us either, because our screwed up government, our corrupt and criminal governments right in the middle of all kinds of oppression and suppression. High profile events in recent months underscore the blossoming ties. In October, Prime Minister Ariel Sharon addressed 3,000 visiting evangelical Christians from 80 countries, including about 450 Americans. Wait a minute. He's been in a coma. He was in a coma for years. This must be an old speech. Anyhow, Pat Robinson, you're a crooked old son of a bitch, and you should be in prison for fraud. Well, my old nemesis is upset. Bill Press, you've probably heard him on the radio. He's a growing old liberal or whatever you want to call him. I hate labels. But he's a jerk. I debated him once in L.A., but it took him and this other big shot Jew commentator, two of them on one. One of them couldn't handle me, so they had two of them, Bill Press and this guy. I think he's a rabbi out there on the West Coast, but he gets a lot of press. I forget his name. I'll probably remember it after a while. But anyhow, they're all upset because MSNBC President Phil Griffin issued an apology after the network tweeted a remark about how the right wing would be offended by a Cheerios commercial featuring a biracial family. Press called race mixed family. The press called the apology unnecessary because the sentiment expressed in that controversial tweet was, in his opinion, the truth. Well, yeah, it is the truth. This race mixing crap that's going on here. I don't know what he said. Here's a clip from his radio show. Just a minute.
It's outrageous. I hate this apology. I think it was unnecessary and just played right into their hands.
Yeah.
You know? And I mean, they want... Are not going to let conservatives watch MSNBC? Fine!
Yeah.
We're not even going to notice that they're how many conservatives seriously are watching Ed Schultz or Rachel Maddow, you know, or Al Sharpton every night?
Yeah, I don't know, but I'm just...
Silly.
I want to see how this probation looks and when it ends. This is... And what, you know, is there going to be a soft landing from the probation? I mean, this is kind of silly at this point.
It is. And, you know, so first of all, good for Cheerios for bringing that spot back and not bowing into the pressure. And as far as this tweet goes, again, maybe the right wing will hate it, but everybody else will go, "Oh, the adorable new Cheerios ad with the biracial family." That's the truth. That is the truth. The right winger, the racist right winger will hate it. Everybody else will like it. It's a beautiful spot.
Well, I'm glad they put that thing on. I wish they'd run it 24 hours a day till people were totally nauseated. The right-wing hypocrites, yeah, they'll be offended. Oh, my, we're not racist. That doesn't bother us, a big nigger laying on the couch munching on Cheerios with a half-black, half-white kid and a white mother over there. Oh, no, that doesn't offend us as long as he's got his immigration papers. So, Bill Press, just keep running that because we like it, because people are going to get more and more racial because of it. And then they might even have the guts enough, these Republicans, maybe someday to come out and say, "Yeah, you're goddamn right, I'm offended. I don't like it because I don't believe in mixing the white race with the Negro race, Bill Press." Let's all be honest and we'll have a lot of fun. You know, everybody gets upset that all these Republicans that watch Fox TV from morning till night and don't want to seem to admit it's nothing but a Republican stage. And you go over to MSNBC and you got nothing but a Democrat stage. You got that half-dead Al Sharpton that no network in their right mind would put on. And then you got all the nutcases that show up on Fox TV. And when Obama says that Fox is unfair, of course they're unfair. They hate your guts, Obama. Not just because you're half black, half white, but because of your positions. And they're not all wrong either. What kills me is that sometimes you have to put things aside and say, "Now, what did he say? Well, I agree with that. And now, what did he say here? Well, I don't agree with that." But the Republicans and the Democrats both have one program. No matter what he says, he's lying. The other side, no matter what he says, he's telling the truth. So when he tells O'Reilly that Fox is picking on him, of course they're picking on him. That's their job.
One of my points on the factor is that poverty is driven by the dissolution of the American family. That is the prime mover, okay? On your watch, median income has dropped 17% among working families in this country. That's not a good record. It's not all your fault. Part of it was this terrible recession. We all know that. Everybody knows that.
Okay.
All right. But 72% of babies in African-American community are born out of wedlock now. Why isn't there a campaign by you and the First Lady to address that problem very explicitly?
Yeah. Actually, Bill, we address it explicitly all the time. I'll send you at least 10 speeches I've made since I've been president talking about the importance of men taking responsibility for their children, talking about the importance of young people delaying gratification, talking about the importance of when it comes to child rearing, paying child support, spending time with your kids, reading with them. So whether it's getting publicity or not is a whole different question.
But I don't see the pressure from the federal government to go in and say, this is wrong. This is killing futures of babies and children.
Well, first of all, I've just got to say, Bill, we talk about it all the time. We'll continue to talk about it. We're convening, for example, philanthropists and business people city by city who are interested in addressing these kinds of problems at the local level. There is an economic component to it as well, though.
Sure.
Because what's interesting when you look at what's going on right now, you're starting to see in a lot of white working class homes similar problems. When men can't find good work, when the economy is shutting ladders of opportunity off from people, whether they're black, white, Hispanic, it doesn't matter, then that puts pressure as well on the home. So you've got an interaction between an economy that isn't generating enough good jobs for folks who traditionally could get blue-collar jobs even if they didn't have a higher education, and some legitimate social concerns that compound the problem. And so we want to hit both.
All right. You're going to okay it, I assume.
Well, first of all, it's not 42,000. That's not correct. It's a couple thousand to build the pipeline. But
42 all well told.
The bottom line is what we're going to do is the process now goes, agencies comment on what the State Department did. Public's allowed to comment. Kerry's going to give me a recommendation.
I assume we're going to do that after 5 years.
We'll take a look at it.
Okay. I'll take that as a yes.
Well, you see the fallacy of our right-wing friends' argument. Like, we have equal people, the black race and the white race and the Asian race, and there's no reason why that these black kids shouldn't all be Einsteins or whatever, or very smart in the inner cities, when we know that a good share of them don't want to learn anything and they just want to play gangbang, and they're not intellectually capable. They're not capable. But they both the president and O'Reilly are kidding themselves. They're both lying about it, evading the real subject. What are you going to do about an inferior race within a superior race other than degenerating the superior race? And then he gets into the Keystone Pipeline, and O'Reilly says it's going to give 42,000 jobs is a goddamn lie. That is a bald-faced lie. The actual numbers will be about 2,000 or 3,000 people working on that pipeline to get it through, and that's only a temporary employment. So this is another capitalist bullshit put out by O'Reilly to put this damn dirty tar sands oil coming down through the United States to benefit China. Not to benefit the United States at all. And the problems up in Canada with that stuff. So, he's a lying son of a gun. And of course, one thing too, O'Reilly assumes that Obama cares more about these black kids than he does white kids, which is a racist assumption right there. Of course he doesn't. I mean, he's half white. He was raised by white people. He doesn't have this big deal about black people. If he does, he hasn't shown it much. He's bullshitted about it, but he hasn't done anything. The average black on the street is worse shape than he ever was. So the very fact that O'Reilly puts his argument in the text that that Obama should do something about it because he's black is racist in itself. I love those racial hypocrites. They're so funny. You can see through them so easily. Well, ding dong bell, pussy's in the well. Let's go back to school. Let's go back to siege and see what we've got to dwell upon today. Linkage. Here's another new word to add to your vocabulary. Linkage. It used to be something known primarily to mechanics, but as of earlier this year, it could also be your future. This one may replace entrapment as the latest dirty trick of the system designed to deflate any potential the movement or the struggle may have before it can get off the ground. It's a quasi-legal takeoff on guilt by association, which even 10 years ago would never have held water, except that now the source from which the juries and grand juries are drawn is sufficiently conditioned that they'll indict or convict on cue from the system. This arose out of the serious scare given to the system by one splinter of the struggle calling itself the Order. The system so surprised and enraged that there is a fight left anywhere sought to tie it in or link as many other struggle facets as they thought they could in order to, if not wipe them out totally, at least pin them down in a defensive legal jungle wherein they either retain expensive counsel or lose by default. Some top struggle people were literally on the run, and others were sweating blood a few months ago because of it. So be reminded that the bastards won't quit. You must, if you ever run seriously afoul of the system, to where they can lay a legalistic finger on you, either disappear totally or confront them totally. No use playing around. Around here, we didn't worry so much about it, the sedition trial investigations, though we had about as much to do with the Order as did those who went being, as those who were being officially harassed. That is practically nothing at all. Our sympathies and our support for the Order ran the same as the others as well. That is 100%, as witnessed by those issues of siege released at that time. Help for members of the Order, we were also in a position to lend about as much tangible support for those men as were the rest, zero. Again, the main difference was, we felt correctly as it turned out, we were in fact untouchable in the newest system craze of linkage. Until things take a very radical turn, I'll stand firm on one thing I've always said regarding system persecution. I've never yet seen smoke where there has not been some actual fire. The system cannot yet invent its cases out of thin air. They can orchestrate them, but that requires your willing participation. They must have something to go on, however shaky, and they can only get through their own agents or through you. In the case involving the Order, their prime move was based upon one of the annual gatherings held at the Aryan Nations Group in Idaho, from out of which came the majority, if not all, the members of the Order. Those who attended that latest gathering before the Order took their course of action were wide open and subject to this latest linkage ploy to shut us down. Simply, if you were there, you must be involved. Long before any of this was ever dreamt of, I ceased attending movement gatherings. In complete candor, I did not, because I dislike reruns, especially when they entail traveling long distances, shelling out a lot of cash, so drastically scarce. Frankly, I can't afford the journey, plus I doubt there's anything I could add that they haven't already heard of, and vice versa. The only thing that might have come out of such an expensive trip would have been my own name on a federal subpoena, and that I can really well live without. No, those few men calling themselves the Order said more in a month of furious action than the rest of us said in 20 years. And of what significance to them at that point in time were the federal subpoenas and the like? I don't mind paying the price, but by God, I demand the price be worth paying. Even before I stopped traveling around to movement functions in the right wing, I had become disinterested in such measly and bothersome things as memberships and so on. This really caused much anxiety among the faker figureheads I've acted as a general secretary for in the past. As Commander Rockwell said in the 60s, there is but one membership, known loosely as the movement, which is bled white and thoroughly confused and dissipated by dozens and dozens of useless, crappy fronts in order to squeeze a tiny portion of the general pool of money held by this common membership. One is required to invest comparatively huge sums in becoming a professional mail-order con artist, and in the case of the Nazi types, to engage in silly-looking and potentially disastrous stunts for the press, which are then fed back to the membership to jack off their emotions and draw off a little more money. That's right-wingism, but it's not revolution, and I got tired of it. And that's the end of our reading for today from James Mason's Siege. And it's just as useful now as it was 25 years ago. I learned a long time ago that airfare and traveling all over the country to these right-wing get-togethers was a waste of time. Because once in a while you'd run into somebody you were glad to see. But on the other hand, they were always totally infiltrated. And somebody made some money off of them, but usually not too much. I see that some are still charging like a couple of $100 for you to get in. I wouldn't pay a couple of $100 to get into the German High Command meeting. Anyhow, he's totally right on this subject, and as you see, he came to that conclusion way back, and so did I. Quit going to those things. Quit spending that money. And even when I was going to give a speech, I said, think to myself, what the hell am I doing here? They all know what I'm going to say pretty much. And even though I think I can say it pretty well, they got 15 speakers here, and they're all going to be saying about the same thing, and then we eat and go home. Big deal. It's a waste of time, as Mahan called it, a bowel movement. Well, let's see how the dotheads are doing. Indian Americans, and that's not wagon burners, don't need Satya Yanella, the Hyderabad-born techie named Microsoft CEO today, to feel good about themselves. Couldn't find an Aryan for the job, of course. Look around the U.S. and you already see Desis in leading positions, and not just in Indian heavy IT sphere where Nadella has soared. Indian dothead Americans are CEOs of Fortune 500 companies, agenda-setting lawyers, celebrated comedians, prominent politicians, beauty pageant winners, TV personalities, and heck, top editors at some of America's most venerable publications. The stereotype of the hard-working model minority has evolved. Sure, Indian Americans still win spelling bees, but they also rap and smoke weed on camera. As a group, the Indian dothead Americans comprise the wealthiest and most educated single community in the U.S., a position of societal prestige that may last for some time yet. A recent survey found that no ethnic group in the U.S. saves more for their children's college education than Indian Americans. Given such overwhelming evidence of the success, some could be tempted to subscribe to the much derided thesis of Amy Chow and Jeb Rubensfeld, new provocative book, The Triple Package, which congratulates Indian Americans, Indian dotted Americans, as well as a few other ethnicities for having the right cultural attributes to flourish in the U.S. Last month in Times Prints publication, the Indian American journalist Saketu Mehta wrote the definitive takedown of the Chow and Rubenfeld cultural argument, which he likened to a new form of American racism. Nadella's journey to Microsoft's top post moved along the same path furrowed by thousands of other dothead Indians, a hyper-competitive college education in India. Though his university was only a mid-ranked one, followed by graduate studies in the U.S. and the birth in Silicon Valley. But the application and the ingenuity, the business savvy, and the drive that saw him excel were all his own. Okay. His ascension as Microsoft CEO is making headlines in India, where the country's NRIs, non-resident Indians, are often held up as national heroes. For decades, well, they should be taking the white man's goodies away from him. They should be looked up to by other Indians. For decades, the successes of pioneering entrepreneurial Indians abroad were seen in contrast to poverty, stagnation, and political cirrhosis in their country of origin. But the aura of respect and celebrity is dimming. See the invective hurled upon New York District Attorney Prett Hawara, accused of being an Indian Uncle Tom, for his role in the controversial case against Indian Deputy Consul Devani Kobragada last year. It's hard to imagine Nadella drawing that sort of ire. But his triumph in the U.S. comes at a moment when the NRIs are flocking back to India, drawn by opportunities in their rapidly changing homeland. The rise of India's economy has created a new domestic confidence and swagger. Hyderabad, where Nadella was born, is now one of Asia's main tech capitals. Of course, American companies have moved there. Of course, they're... Keys to Microsoft's global plans. The next Satya Nadella won't need to be a hyphenated Indian American after all. So next time you think you want to buy something from Microsoft, think about it. Think long and hard. My comment to that article was, thanks a lot, Uncle Sappy, for giving away our birthright. Poor old Martin Luther King. This is from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Bernice King, in a stinging rebuke against her brothers, is accusing them of trying to physically sell their father's Nobel Peace Prize, as well as the family Bible used by President Barack Obama when he was sworn in for the second time as president. On Friday, brothers Martin Luther King III and Dexter Stott King filed a complaint in the Fulton County Superior Court on behalf of the King Estate for emergency injunctive relief, claiming their sister has hidden the items. The suit seems to have items turned over to Martin Luther King III, who is the chairman of the estate's board. In a statement issued Tuesday morning, Bernice King said that last month her brothers informed her that they wanted to sell the items, which she opposed. Whoops, wait a minute, I lost my place. Quote, while I love my brothers dearly, this latest decision by them is extremely troubling. Not only am I appalled and utterly ashamed, I am frankly disappointed that they would even entertain the thought of selling off these precious items. It reveals a desperation beyond comprehension, Bernice King said. Quote, our father must be turning over in his grave. Trying to hawk the family jewels. Well, here's somebody that's pissed off at us white people. Or the corporations. White nativists and present-day heirs of the Know-Nothing Party, among among in the GOP to the degree that they can be separated from one another are upset about Coca-Cola's America the Beautiful commercial during the Super Bowl. Their anger reflects a fear about a changing America, in other words, a race-mixing America, where mediocre white people, isn't that a racist term, such as themselves are losing their country to undeserving black and brown folks. Of course, it's obligatory that the white race has deployed buck dancing, right-wing self-hating, political blackface performers such as Alan West to serve as mouthpieces for their racist sentiments about Coca-Cola's recent America the Beautiful commercial. Isn't that the way they do it, the Republicans? They got these house niggers that they send out front to do their bitching for them. History laughs at us all. She does this both for sport and because her own mercurial nature. Jim and Jane Crow America was not limited to the iconic visuals of a public memory, such as segregated water fountains and discriminatory seating in buses. White supremacy was a total social order, one that extended even to soda consumption and its marketing in the United States of apartheid America. Yeah. Let's see here. The New York Times explored this dynamic in a recent piece with the historian Grace Elizabeth Hale. Chandler began marketing the drink as refreshing rather than medicinal and managed to survive the controversy. But concerns exploded again after the company pioneered its distinctive glass bottles in 1899, which moved Coke out of the segregated spaces of the soda fountain. Anyone with a nickel, black or white, could now drink the cocaine-infused beverage. Middle-class whites worried that soft drinks were contributing to what they saw as an exploding cocaine use among African Americans. Southern newspapers reported that Negro cocaine fiends were raping white women, the police powerless to stop them. By 1903, Chandler had bowed to white fears, and a wave of anti-narcotics legislation removed the cocaine and added more sugar and caffeine. I don't know. I think the sugar is more dangerous than the cocaine. Coke's recipe wasn't the only thing influenced by white supremacy. Through the 1920s and 30s, it studiously ignored the African-American market. Promotional material appeared in segregated locations that served both races, but rarely in those that catered to African-Americans alone. Consequently, Coca-Cola was transformed into the white man's drink during the early part of the 20th century. Likewise, Pepsi was slurred as a nigger Coke because of its efforts to reach out to the African-American community in order to profit maximized by filling a market niche. Stupidity often triumphs despite itself, this black writer says. On occasion, stupidity also wins because of how persistent willpower pays dividends in many areas of life. Well, that's true. To point the right-wing troglodytes who are upset about Coca-Cola's use of the song America the Beautiful, which was written by a woman with populist leanings who happened to be a lesbian, are retrograde actors who want to pull Coca-Cola backwards and not forwards in terms of the company's public racial politics. And what is lost in all of this desperate performance by the white right in their opposition to the company's multilingual performance of the song America the Beautiful? Coca-Cola is a multinational global company, one that has no loyalty to either the United States or the white right's antiquated notions of a real America. Well, none of the capitalists do. Coca-Cola mocks the white right and all others who are not its stockholders. Profits trump people again, of course, as is the habit of the Republican Party in post-civil rights era. white racial identity politics are preferred as a default strategy to avoid discussing how white racism and xenophobia hurts all Americans across the color line. So take that, you white people, and go on out there and drink that sugar-laced Coca-Cola. You know, so you got the Negroes off of it. You got the white boys drinking more of that sugar-laced crap and causing you to have cancer and heart attacks. So I guess the blacks won out there until they were able to buy it readily along the street. So another non-issue that we don't give a damn about, whether they how they sing America the Beautiful. Do you care anymore? How many flags they salute, how many pledges of allegiance they profess, all that bullshit? No, we only have one thing to think about, and that is survival of the race, period. All the rest of the bullshit is going to have to go down a black hole. And maybe we'll get some new songs together next time round. How about that? But I'm not going to be drinking Coca-Cola. I have not drank Coca-Cola since I was a child. And if you want to hurt your body, start drinking Coca-Cola or Pepsi or any of that stuff with all that sugar in it. There's another story I didn't get to about how they slovenly keep telling this story about the Tuskegee pilots, the black pilots. And every time they tell it, their nose must get longer because the official archives of the U.S. Army Air Force does not substantiate much of what they say about these Tuskegee black pilots and their ventures over in Europe. Because if you'll read the official papers of the U.S. Army Air Force, they got the shit shot out of them over the Mediterranean because when the German Air Force came up with their Stuka planes and whatever, they were no match for the Germans. But somehow they've got it all twisted around, and now they keep promoting all over the place. And of course they made that movie Red Wings and the whole bit, which I won't watch. So anyhow, that's the story there. I didn't cover that story, but I guess I did cover it right now. Okay, bye-bye, 14-5, and shut up. Just remember, there's no answer to most problems as long as you incorporate the myth of equality or the myth of rights, God-given rights or natural rights or period. All you have is privileges granted to you by the ruling class. Don't forget it.
An evening haze settling over town, starlight by the edge of the creek. The buying power of the proletariat's gone down, money's getting shallow and weak. Well, the place I love best is a sweet memory, is the new path that we trod. They say low wages are reality if we want it from here abroad. My cruel weapons have been put on the shelf. Come sit down on my knee. You are dearer to me than myself, as you yourself can see. While I'm listening to the steel rails a hum, got both eyes tight shut. Just sitting here trying to keep the hunger from creeping its way into my gut. Maybe at the bottom, don't lag behind. Bring me my boots and shoes. You can hang back or fight your best on the front line. Sing a little bit of these working bands. Well, I'm sailing on back, ready for the long haul. Tossed by the winds and the sea. I'll drag them all down to hell, and I'll stand up at the wall. I'll sell them to an enemy. I'm trying to feed my soul with thought. Gonna sleep off the rest of the day. Sometimes in my boots and shoes. You can hang back or fight your battle on the front line. Sing a little bit of these working bands. Memories of you to me have clung. You wounded me.